I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Podcast. We will be discussing Dipan, the Palme d'Or winning film by Jacques Audiard. I'm Sam Hallett, and this week I'm joined by Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
And Ursi Kolezzi again.
Hello.
Hello. So Dipan is not about deep pan pizzas, which you might think. It's actually about a Sri Lankan soldier who fought for the losing side of the Sri Lankan Civil War. And it follows him as he flees his country along with two strangers, a woman and a little girl, as in the attempt to carry themselves off as a family unit in order to have a better chance of seeking refuge in France. But once they settle down in a rundown prison estate, the lead character, known as Dipan, his violent past resurfaces. So, first things first. What did you actually think of the film? Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah?
It was great. It was a great kind of insight into the refugee life and something I don't think has been explored very much on film, and it's so topical at the moment.
Very topical, very relevant.
Yeah, and the fact that it won the Palme d'Or last year as well, and it still kind of carries relevance throughout, and I think it will remain relevant as as kind of modern events unfold. And I really love that. I think Audiard is one of the most interesting directors to work in the industry, even at the moment, definitely. Regardless of whether he's French or not. Yeah,
I think he's the most interesting French film director at the moment. And this, I think, is his most socially conscious film, because you have things like The Beat That My Heart Skipped, Rust and Bone, A Prophet, which all kind of have a sort of social commentary infused in them slightly. But this, more than any of them, is telling a story that millions of people are actually going through in reality. And although I think at some points it goes slightly beyond realism at times, particularly in the ending, we'll talk about that later. But I think for most of the film, it's very much matter-of-fact slice of life for refugees and the situations they're going through.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's discuss the characters. So Dipan, played by, and apologies, pronunciations are going to be all over the show.
We're going to try our best.
Yeah.
Jizuthasan Antanithasan, who in reality was a Tamil Tiger soldier who, after the war, emigrated to France. And you mentioned, Jenna, before we started, that he was an activist and a writer.
Yeah, so he's a writer and goes by the name of Shoba as his kind of writing name. He kind of said that 50% of the story of Dipan feels very true to his own story. The way he came in with false papers into France and had to work on the black market in the way that Dipan did. And so I think it's like great to see someone bringing all of that truth to a role. Kind of similarly, Ursi and I were saying to Son of Saul last week.
Absolutely.
Or a couple of weeks ago.
The idea, that someone recreating their life through acting is used quite a bit nowadays.
Yeah. And it's his first acting job as well.
Another newcomer. Leads, all three of the leads. This is their first role in a major film. And it won the Palme d'Or, which is crazy.
The first film in Tamil to win the Palme d'Or.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interestingly, although it's a French production, very little of the film is actually in French.
Yeah, actually, he translated the script from French into Tamil.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I thought Dipan was an interesting sort of protagonist, a hero, if you will, because it's very up and down, where I thought, for me, whether you like him or not.
Yeah, he's not always completely likeable. No. And I think, you know, that makes it all the more real. We're saying it's kind of a slice of life. It's rooted in realism. That, you know, not everyone's a perfect person, and you can definitely see his flaws as the story unfolds.
And he is a survivor more than anything else, which makes him at times quite selfish.
Yeah. He's generally out for himself, I think, in the beginning.
Even before you see the title card of Deepan, you see him having to, you know, dispose of the bodies of his comrades. And I think that kind of brutality leaves you quite numb to interaction.
Oh, another link to Son of Saul.
But you do see a more friendly and a happier side come through than in Son of Saul. It's not as dark as that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought just he's... there was something, you know, he's very rugged, he's sort of very hairy and sort of quite masculine, but also quite kind of subservient as well. Like, he was very happy when he becomes a caretaker. I think as well, when he first goes to France, you see him selling the toys and things like that, and he has to wear the fake,
That is a fantastic scene.
Yes, like that, when they reveal the title.
It's so odiant because he does that. He does that in other films as well, and you see them glimmering in the surface, out of focus.
Yeah, and I really thought for a while it might have been the lights of boats.
So did I as well.
It kind of felt like it went from that journey from the boats onto the streets of Paris with the glowing lights, and you kind of see... how, you know, I'm sure we've all been places where we've had people selling us things like that, and you kind of ignore, and it made me feel so guilty that I've not really given these people the time of day.
You do ignore them, you say no thank you, and then you wait for the restaurant manager to come by and usher them away
and make life safe for you again.
You see
Deepan running away from that scene, and then him saying I can't stand this, and you know, and you think how awful that he's gone from something so horrendous at home to something here that he can't stand. It's humiliating.
Also, I think that he's quite a proud character as well, because obviously because he was probably a high ranked, well, from what I can gather anyway, person in the Tamil Tigers, and to go to this existence where he's begging for scraps in effect and has to be subservient to other people that he knows, by the way, especially in the estate, that he knows are scum.
Yeah.
He knows he has been in contact with gangs like this back in his home as well. And I think his pride really kind of clouds his judgment most of the times as well. And you can see him not really... you can see him wanting to go back to the discipline of his home, but then at the same time, he's like, I'm a glorified cleaner, that's all it is. Je suis le gardien, which he keeps repeating.
There's throughout the film, every now and then, there's like the shot of an elephant, which I think is, from the point of view of all three of the characters, like their mental subjectivity of wanting to go back home and wishing that they could just open the window and see.
Yeah, and it's very peaceful, that shot of that elephant. So they're kind of all-knowing, moving through the forest.
Yeah, you really feel like you can touch it as well.
Yeah.
It's really well lit and everything.
Yes, yeah. But it's a kind of peace that doesn't exist for them at home anymore. Yeah. And they can't go back.
Yeah, and as a parenthesis, because I thought elephant... This is a Hindu. They're both Hindus. They're all three of them. Sorry, and it has.
Is Deepan Hindu as well? Yeah, he is.
Yeah, I researched it, and I thought of the most simple link between the elephant and their religion, which is Ganesha, he is the god of beginnings as well, which I thought was a very nice kind of symbol.
Yeah, there's
too.
A lovely scene where they pray to Ganesh as well, for the food and things, and religion plays like an undercurrent to the whole thing.
Definitely,
There's a point where Deepan tells his wife, or his supposed wife, to wear a headscarf. Yeah.
To fit in.
Yeah, and she said, but it's not my religion. He said, it's not about religion anymore. Yeah. And that's quite an interesting note the film takes.
Yeah, there's loads of little nice moments like that. And I also really like the moment where they're eating dinner and Eliel, the little girl, is eating with her hands.
Yeah.
And he tells her, I know you've got to eat with a spoon because tomorrow you're going to have to eat with a spoon. It's just kind of that transitioning, like trying
into
to fit
Western
in.
Into Western world, yeah.
Yeah. So as Deepan's supposed wife is Kalyaswari Srinivasan. She's Yalini. She, for me, was the most interesting character in this.
Yes.
Because she's someone who, I think it took a while for her to have her own character. Because you see her running around this sort of refugee area in Sri Lanka trying to find a little girl without a mother so she could go to Deepan and say, okay, we're this family. but she's mid-20s in the film?
Yeah, well, she says she's 26 to begin with, and then she pretends to be 24, but she looks really young. She could be even 21. She definitely doesn't...
And there's a line where Deepan says, it's like, I'm taking care of two children. Yeah. And she's so young. There are times when I think that shines through, particularly when, because she gets her own job looking after an older gentleman.
Mr. Habib.
Yeah. And,
Hadid.
Also. Habib, I think.
Habib, is it his nephew?
I think it's his son.
His son released from prison. And there's a scene where he sort of offers her a joint.
Yeah.
And she says, oh no, at first. And then he leaves the room and then she picks up and takes it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's what a 20...
And it has 20... a cheeky smile on her
that's
face.
What like, do. Oh no, and what am I doing? She kind of, I don't know, she kind of had a crush on him a little bit.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a sexual tension there. And it seemed like she was sort of coming into womanhood throughout the film. Yeah. She seemed very young. And so there's a really sweet scene between her and Ilyal as the daughter, where she says, you need to try and be nice to me. You need to try and be my mum. Yeah. And she's like, I don't really know how to be. And throughout like this film, she kind of learns how to do that and how to be a woman. Like throughout her scenes with Brahim, where she kind of fancies him and she wants to sit with him, and with her interactions with Deepan as well.
She's got a very complex relationship with Deepan, kind of loving but also kind of a contempt between the two slightly, just in the situation they're in.
Well, we don't know what side of it all they're both on either.
No.
Because obviously Deepan's a soldier and it's never said, but it could be that she's, you know, from the other side of the war or whatever.
Yeah, I found her to be a really interesting character. And then you've got Claudine Vinasitwambi as Ilyal, the child. Disappears from the film towards the second half, I thought, of it. But great performance from essentially a 9-year-old girl in her first
absolutely
film.
Absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the one that has to do most of the two languages as well.
She's the translator, And there's some really sort of interesting bits with her at school not being able to fit in.
That scene, I have to admit, that scene where they drop her off into class the first time around, all the students are looking at her once they open the door, and then she runs to Deepan.
I don't want to.
I thought, again, it's Odiar being very realistic. Mm. There's no lingering shot on Ilyal kind of nearly crying. Mm. It is the two parents walking away, and then her just bolting towards Deepan, who isn't her father. She knows he isn't her father.
But she's got.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so heartwarming to see that.
Yeah, her fitting into the school is really, really, like, difficult to watch in some respects.
Yeah.
You know, you just want her to be able to fit in, and she doesn't with those girls, and you see her sort of, her outbursts of violence. Yeah. And, you know, you often sort of think about school, like, school days and the children who fight with each other and you think of as bullies or whatever. But when you kind of take them out of the school environment and think about what's coming from home and behind that, it's really easy to see where that comes from.
Definitely. I really love the film's take on family as well. The sort of, because they're not a family. And it takes them, I love that there's a progression to them becoming a family. It's not just as soon as they meet, okay, we're a family. It's these are strangers living together in a strange place.
Mm.
And I love the progression. It takes time for them to, for Deepan and Yelini to actually appear husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where she says, oh, you've believed your own lie. I think we believe the lie as well.
Yeah, definitely.
We're so convinced that, these are a family, that's their daughter.
Because that's what they're presenting to the world constantly. It's what they have to pretend.
Yeah.
You even forget that it's not even their real name.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's true.
We don't even know. I think we know Deepan's real name at some point, but we don't know the others' real names. Yeah, so for us as well, we're being lied to, and it's worked. There's a whole thing as well to this film about sort of the past resurfacing. I think that's done really well. And this whole thing of the cycle of violence. So in this estate, it's like a gang turf, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's run by the gangs. There are no real police ever.
Yeah, there's no police, there's no social workers. Yeah.
I thought that it was a very interesting shot at one point. I don't know if you guys remember it, but I think you have Deepan walking through the estate, with his broom, his mop, and his makeshift kind of tool bag.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the camera pans up.
I was going to talk about the shot. Yeah.
Go ahead. When the camera pans up from the estate, you're expecting to see maybe the Eiffel Tower. You don't know. Maybe you're expecting to see some form of civilization just outside in the outskirts of that estate.
Mm-hmm.
But then it cuts completely. So you kind of feel like it's a self-contained world.
Yeah.
And there's no... There's nobody outside. Yeah. It's that.
Barely
it's their world.
Any of the film takes place outside of that estate, and that it's like a new war zone, really, get sent to. And yeah, seeing them navigate their life there is very interesting.
Well, there's a couple of little moments that show the parallels between this and what they've just left in Sri Lanka, that because they talk about the gangs, and Deepan says, "Oh, they're like the gangs from home, but not as dangerous." And there's a moment where Deepan draws like a white line between his building and another building. It's kind of, and says, "This is the no fire zone." Mm-hmm. As when the tension escalates, there's also these on the roofs. There's always people on the roofs, like sort of watchmen,
lookouts.
Yeah, so it is like a war zone. They've just left one war zone for another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's a point where they're coming back into the estate and they try and like body search them on the way in and everything. Yeah. So
yeah, it's got its own rules as well.
Yeah,
and it's probably its own currency, drugs. Yeah, really interesting portrayal of, like, gangs and estates.
Yeah, and I was wondering what you guys thought about how welcome they made Deepan and the family on that estate.
It surprised me this did, because at first they welcome him very well. I thought, oh, it's going to be, they're going to be quite racist towards him.
That's what I thought. I can only pick out one racist there was a, there, I think I heard.
When it escalates, that happened,
Yeah.
I know, the one.
I think that also mostly stems from the fact that the estate... I mean, there is probably not a white Caucasian male, or very few, because most Habib and what's his son's name?
Rahim
are Middle Eastern, if you base it on their names, at least, or Algerian. And most of the people that he encounters are actually not white, or there's some, but they're not really given any, they're just background. Most of the people that Deepan meets are from various other ethnicities.
And they kind of, they give him a real respect for the fact that he's
the caretaker. He looks after the building that we love, kind of. Yeah, and I think at first there's this thing of, oh, you can't go in this building after a certain time. But yeah, eventually he says good morning to everyone. And yeah, there's a respect for him as the caretaker, which was nice to see.
Definitely.
But I think I was quite glad when it escalated, because I thought, oh, this is seeming a bit too... Not a lot, like I love watching people suffer. I thought, this feels too easy for them now.
Your friendly neighborhood criminals.
Yeah. Your friendly drug dealer.
Yeah, I thought this is, okay. But that was really well done. The whole thing of it being the war being recreated in this zone. And there's a scene as well, without giving too much away, there's a sort of a shootout between some gangs.
Yeah, you're never sure really who's good, who's bad, why.
And Yelini and Eliel are sort of caught up in it, and they duck cover. But it was nice to see... Nice. It was good to see that sort of gang... A shootout shown from the point of view of a civilian for once. Mm. And I'm not saying that I don't enjoy a shootout in a film, because I do. And they're really entertaining. But it's nice to get a reality check every now and then.
Yeah.
That when it does happen, it's not fun, it's not exciting, it's terrifying.
And as well for Ilya and Yelini, it was putting them straight back to where they've come from.
The whole thing is to get away from that.
Yeah.
And they're straight back in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is the precipitating factor for Yelini to want to go to England to complete her journey.
Yes.
Because that is what she initially wants to do. She doesn't want... I can remember the scene where they're all being, in Sri Lanka, hustled into the boat. Mm-hmm. And Yelini...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Turning to Deepan, are we going to England? No, we're not. We're going to France. And she just like, I have a cousin in England. I have nothing in France.
That's
I have two strangers
goal,
with me.
It?
She wants to get to England,
Which to her is the equivalent of the Promised Land
in a way? Yeah, I guess so. I think that's particularly, we'll talk about in that more detail later, I think, the whole day, England being the Promised Land. But I think, yeah, for her especially, the goal is to get to England, and that's where you can make your life, which was interesting. Okay, any more points before we go into spoiler territory? Talk about the film's sort of final moments.
I wanted to ask you guys, what did you think of the other supporting characters around the estate?
Yeah.
Because you're right, in the beginning they do seem friendly, but from the I can never remember his name. What's his name?
The guy that shows them around?
The no, not Yusuf, the main gang, the
Brahim.
The prince Brahim. Of the estate.
Brahim, yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
What did you think of him, actually?
I thought he was, an interesting character, very up and down, because at first he sort of compliments Yelena on her food, kind of flirts with her, he sort of laughs about the fact that she sort of shakes her head in a funny way. That was a nice little moment.
Yeah, and there were two cultures coming together and sort of explaining their...
There is actually one of the most impressive scenes, is where he's talking fluently in French and she's talking in Tamil, and they have no idea what either of them's saying, but they're both kind of letting everything out.
It's kind of a confessional, isn't it? He's that kind of guy that needs to hold everything together because he is the boss of the estate, and he can't let any of that crack. But because he's there, able to talk to someone who is kind and compassionate and can't understand a word he's saying, he can let that go. Yeah. And the same for her. She can't talk to anyone because her secret could get them to supported, and she doesn't want that. And it's a really beautiful moment. And I think with his character, the danger and was really important to it for I think Yelena in her kind of burgeoning womanhood to fancy him. He's a little bit dangerous,
but then also have the safe option.
Yeah, like of Deepan at home. Yeah, and that's essentially what she decides to go for. Really, without spoilers.
Yeah. No, I thought he was a really well-rounded character, actually. He wasn't just nefarious villain, which he could have easily been.
Yes.
There's also Yusuf as well, the guy that shows him around at the beginning. He's also kind of helpful, but at the same time, I don't know, did you think there was an air that he was exploiting them a little bit?
Potentially. There was a bit where sort of he says that he'll pay Yelena €500 a month, and Deepan's like, don't pretend that's a lot of money. And it was obviously for them, €500 a month is a lot, but we know €500 a month for that job is not enough money. So obviously there is some exploitation going on, but he seemed friendly enough.
He's
sort of working.
I feel like he's
like
a mediator between the gangs and trying to keep up the line. So this film won the Palme d'Or last year. I really liked this film. Like you said, it's a slice of the world that we're bombarded with at the moment through media, and it's important to see it from the refugee's point of view, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really liked it. Well deserving of the Palme d'Or.
Yes.
Cannes Film Festival is going on at the moment, so do follow that, because I'm sure we'll be talking about
it
in a few weeks.
I think it was Audiard. I think there was a couple of articles that said that the previous year he had not won for another film, which might have been Rust and Bone, or A Prophet, and I think it was the way for Cannes to go, no, we recognise you, have it.
Because
it was a lot of competition that year when it won the Palme d'Or, and it was a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I remember it being a surprise. Yeah, it was the Coen brothers were head of the jury last year as well, so it was them that awarded it. Yeah.
Oh, that makes a bit sense.
Okay, great. So, see Deepan if you can. Absolutely loved it. So, if you haven't seen the film, go away and see it, and then come back, because we're now going to talk about the end of the film. I have some light criticisms of the end of the film.
This is where I got my biggest questions, because I think throughout the whole film you're following this, it's almost very realistic story, and then it gets to the final eighth, and it becomes so much less realistic.
Yeah, I thought that's my problem.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is, so Yelena is in the flat with Brahim, and then there's a gun, a shootout where Mr. Habib is killed and Brahim is injured, and he puts a gun to Yelena's head and says, "You've got to help me get out."
Yeah.
And she calls Deepan and says, "We need to help us get out of the building, because it appears to be like under siege by the gangs." And Deepan, you sort of see him walk up, and then suddenly he gets out a machete and a screwdriver.
Yeah.
And it turns into an action film.
A real bloodbath.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
we call it the Terminator scene, because he can do anything.
Yeah.
He's the... I mean, but then we've been given the context that he's a soldier.
Yes.
Yep.
And you know, I think the fact that he drew a line and said no fire zone was kind of a warning. And then there's a bit where he's talking with some other people and Yelena says to him, oh, is that your new, are they your new soldiers? Is that your new army? So I think we know that he has the potential to have this level of violence.
Yeah, and he has been contacted by his old commander or something like that. And that's a really beautiful scene where he says, the war's over. And because all my family are dead and I don't have anything left to fight for anymore. Yeah. And but from that scene on, you see him singing a song that obviously was a soldier's song or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was a military chant.
Yeah, and you sort of see him becoming sort of re-indoctrinated into that way of thinking. Yeah. So it does make sense for him to sort of come back in this aggressive sort of fighting way.
Yeah, but, and to some way enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because that's what he's known for since, when did the war start? In the 80s, wasn't it?
83, and so it's 2009.
Yeah, assuming he, you know, took up arms then, most of the large chunk of his life has been devoted to fighting. Mm-hmm. So I think it seems natural for him to go back to that. But I just, the way it's shot, it felt very much like an action film. I mean, it's not done badly. It didn't ruin the film. It just, for me, felt slightly out of place.
Well, just a bit unrealistic.
It's a massive shootout. Yeah. A car explodes. And I know it's the whole thing of, the police kind of either ignore what goes on in the estate because of fear or just because these are the poor people and immigrants and they don't care.
Yeah.
But it did feel very extreme.
Yes, yeah.
But see, I really liked it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there are subtle, like you guys said, there are subtle hints that are dropped in the movie that show that Deepan still has a lot of rage within him, and there's no way for him to express it because he is trying to follow the rules of the estate, whatever these may be. They're not his, but they are the rules he must abide by because he needs to stay in France no matter what. And the moment where he finds a picture of his wife and two kids who are now dead, and he makes them what I'm assuming is a shrine.
A tomb.
And to pray for, and he kind of makes two little kind of closet doors, I guess, that you can say that he can close and open whenever he wants because he still wants to keep their existence maybe a private thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last act where he goes completely, he loses it, is him mourning, in my opinion, him really expressing what the rage that he's been feeling since the end of the war, because he was on the losing side, they lost, it's his opportunity to win at something, and it's his opportunity to avenge his family, even though the people that the captors of his current family, like they don't have his real family.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have his real wife. But in his mind, because he's believed the lie, it's his way to go back and reclaim them, whatever their form is at this point, whatever. Yeah. And the way it was shot, I think I loved it. Even though Odiar isn't known for his action scenes, like that's a very it's a very underflexed genre muscle he's doing.
There are hints of it in the beat that my heart skipped, but in a far more underplayed, subtle tone. I guess it's come from what I expected compared to what I got, because I expected it to be a very tense sneaking into the building, sneaking them out.
Yeah.
I think it's just when he went up to the guy with the machete and the screwdriver, I was like, oh, okay, it's this.
Here we go.
It was very full on. But no, I get your point that it's quite cathartic for him, and this is him finishing what he started.
Although we should... I was with it. I can get that it's implausible, by the way.
It does
come out of left field completely. But what really came out of left field for me was that last shot.
The last shot, which...
I was so confused.
Because he gets to the top of the building, Brahim has died, and he's with Yelena. And then the next scene is jolly old England, a nice country street.
A beautiful magnolia tree.
A black taxi driving down the road. And then...
a baby...
There are barbecue, there are other, I assume there are other Sri Lankans there, other...
Yeah, well, it seemed like a community. It seemed very happy.
Neighbourhood barbecue.
And, you know, that is what you want for that family who have been through so much. Yeah. You want them to
They
be
finally
happy.
Got to England, the promised land.
Yeah, but it does paint England in this really strange light, or London, I'm assuming it's London because it's a black cab.
Yeah.
In a And, you know, we know that there are parts of that like that in London, but there are also parts that bear a striking resemblance to where they've come Paris. From, in yeah. Paris. And so it was a strange portrayal.
And what is Audiard trying to say
I'm
as well
sure.
with
that's
that?
What I was thinking. I thought, okay, for me, that was a dream.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I thought this must be a dream. And I mean, it's never explained whether it is a dream or it's not.
Or if it's real.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I thought about that is when you see Deepan driving in the car, it looks like he gets shot.
I thought that he gets shot in the
head or something like
yes,
that.
Yes,
he gets like I thought. Oh, maybe
and there's blood
there is blood.
Down his forehead.
Yeah.
And then that kind of goes away, and he gets to Yelini, and then it cuts, and they're in England. And yeah. part of me was thinking, well, maybe did he die in the car?
I'm not sure, but and there's also he says to her, "Oh, you're covered in blood," and she said, "Oh, it's not my blood, it's his." But I thought, maybe it is her blood, and she's also dying, and they die in the building. Because they are, I mean, there's one thing getting to her, but then there's getting out, and there is still a large scale gang war.
And, you know, the police are
war.
Going to come when you've killed that many
and
people.
The car is on fire right at the entrance as well, so you're going to die of smoke inhalation.
Yeah,
makes your
there's
mind
a lot
a bit
going on, and it just, I for me it was dream, but I'm not really sure the reason we got that ending.
Yeah,
that also begs the question if actually the last act that seems so implausible might just be a fantasy instead.
Yeah, that's another thing, I think that's quite plausible as well.
It's certainly interesting, but for me it just felt like, for a film that's been so real, and it's a bit about the real plight and the real struggle of refugees, and, you know, this is
the
set
reality
in 2009,
they face. Yeah.
to then sort of change it up with such a kind of implausible final act felt like a shame to me. But I can see what he was trying to do.
Yeah. I think maybe it also stems from, maybe Audiard just wants to say that you were with this family of immigrants that are in a strange land, abiding by rules that they haven't voted for, created. Not there's no democracy in this. It's an estate that bears resemblance to basically a dictatorship, or at least nepotism is involved. And that final act is what they maybe all, in some way, if they come from that violent background, maybe what they all kind of wish at one point that they could do, rise up against a system that keeps them oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know. I think you're right. The violence of it just seems so completely unrealistic and so it confuses the message.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like I've talked you around, Ursie.
I still love that end scene. I still love it because of the many questions that it actually asked.
Yeah, no, it is a good talking point.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, I was never bored by it. I didn't think, oh, this is a boring way to end it. I was really engaged and I did want him to get to the top. I just think it's from a different film.
Yes, yeah.
But then maybe Audiard is maybe saying, oh, if this was a white French male doing this, you wouldn't question it. It's just that we're used to seeing refugees as kind of slightly passive, downtrodden people who are being forced to do everything. Like, the whole way through, he's being forced to do things, relatively humiliating jobs at times. And when we finally see him doing something of his own mission, we question it. So maybe something about that.
Maybe.
Who knows? There's also one scene that we didn't really get to talk about, and that's he's kind of drunk, and he's just had a big argument with Yelini, and he almost kind of sexually assaults her.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene. Yeah. I was really hoping it wasn't going to go down that route,
and it doesn't. Yeah.
Their relationship is very interesting.
Yeah.
Because obviously they're complete strangers. He is significantly older than her.
Yeah.
But she's sort of, as we said before, finding herself as a woman.
Yeah.
Growing up, and she's the only male, they're the only kind of male female they have contact to, because they're not really integrated into the rest of the society. And so there's a scene where he's sort of like stealing looks at her as she's getting changed from the shower.
Yeah.
And part of it is like, oh, she quite likes it. They're finding each other and they do sleep together.
Yeah.
And then a little later on, they've had this argument and he tries to do it again and she's not having any of it.
He forces himself on her a little bit,
like,
eventually.
About four times. Yeah. I mean, nothing happens.
But it is, that was very uncomfortable to watch. And I was thinking, oh, please don't go down this avenue, because this would just destroy everything that's gone before it. I'm glad they didn't, but it's still an interesting
scene. Well, it's kind of layers into their relationship, isn't it?
Yeah.
About how they're sort of getting to know each other and being
reading
who they are.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how Audiard kind of treats relationships between men and women in generally most of his films. Because Rust and Bone, for example, it's, I think you can draw parallels between Rust and Bone and Deep End, because both female and male characters have love-hate relationships. However, sex is a necessity in both, because it's loneliness drives them, alienation from their peers or their surroundings. But then once this dissipates, once the lust basically has been fulfilled, love remains a question mark, because you still don't know if these two actually have deep feelings for each other until the end of the film where they express it. So it's an interesting way of framing it, because I think it's genuinely just realistic. There is, in the beginning with Deepan and Yalini, I didn't discern any feelings of particular love, because he's peering through at her when she's naked taking a shower. She is looking at him in a lustful way, but then she also has Brahim. So her, like we said, her discovery of men is very, or her interest in men is very new, and it's all based on sex. On desire.
Yeah, and Brahim has got that kind of, like, bad boy. He's younger, he's good-looking, I think, to her, and has that kind of allure, whereas Deepan is the sort of steady, safe protector. And it seems like that's what she chooses for herself in the end.
Well, he's almost a father figure to her as well, in a weird way. I mean, not just in the way that he says, oh, it's like I have two children. He is the provider for her and the child, and he's quite fatherly to her as well, I think, at times. So there's that to it as well. Right, so we're going to wrap up there. Any final thoughts on Deepan?
It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking, really interesting look into the refugee crisis, and also not just on Deepan, but we've seen this on Curzon Curates, which is great. It happens on a Monday and a Wednesday, and it's great to catch a film that you've missed the first time around.
So thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.